Okay, this is part B of session 47, recorded on July 30th, 2007. So you want to go into the second coming part right now?
Yeah.
Okay, so the final level, the ground is second coming. The effects of the bottom-up environment of second coming are in the popular art form Ronald Reagan and Pope John Paul II, so we're talking about the 80s. Actually, this is the period when the chart's being made. The highbrow art form is Furry Lint. That was a radio play that I sort of managed and Bob Marshall presented on the radio. But that was done in 88, but Furry Lint as a concept was something I'd been talking about for a long time. You know, around the time I met Bob Marshall, 83, 84, because it came out of the Furry Lint, the Larry Flint experience with Hustler magazine and Mae Brussel in late 1983 and early 1984 when he ran for president. So Furry Lint refers to Larry Flint. And then the technological art form is Mass Man, which was, Mass Man, as McLuhan said, was not tribal. Mass Man was the simultaneous imploded, discarnate effect for everybody. So it was kind of a collective ESP. That's what Mass Man means there. And then the popular archetype user is monarch of, what are people feeling? They're the monarchs of the universe. And that would be Shirley MacLaine and Ramtha and the New Age stuff and fractals and holograms and Fritjof Capra's physics, the new physics, maybe even a bit of Jack Sarfati physics, the new science, the third wave of science, people wondering about black holes and Stephen Hawking, okay?
Yeah, and that deserved some clarification, because usually when you talk about the universe with people, they're thinking about the physical extension of space, you know, what can you see through your telescope. They're not thinking about mediumship.
No, but that's what came in the 80s, was the New Age dogma about feeling the universe.
Yeah, well, that might be more appropriate to call that the cosmos.
Right, well, that's Bob Marshall picked universe, but it includes the Stephen Hawking, so you're including both.
Yeah.
And so people were projecting different fantasies on the universe.
Mm-hmm.
And then the dropout was outer space, and that was the space shuttle Challenger. Challenger hadn't happened by the time of this, but basically Star Wars.
When did Challenger happen?
In January 86, and this was made in 85, but the Star Wars. So the immediate landscape, the immediate neighborhood of our solar system started to become...
Well, Star Wars happened in the previous phase, but it was, by now it's...
Okay, Star Wars is outer space, the nearby outer space, not the universe.
Oh, yeah, it's becoming the ghetto or the dropout.
Yeah. Excuse me?
Well, in what sense are we see, you know, Star Wars is now being sort of... cliche or old
back then?
Yeah,
but no, back then it's no, it became because it was a ghetto. Reagan hijacked the old ghetto and said, we're gonna have some gang wars here, we're gonna start putting up our own beam weapons and nail the Ruskies.
Okay, when you said Star Wars, I was thinking of the movie, but you meant the Reagan Star Wars program.
What was it called? Strategic something SDI.
yeah,
Strategic Defense Initiative.
Yeah.
So that happens in March 83 is when he does his TV show and announces it, and, you know, bothers the Soviet Union, gets panicky. So that's the hood, the gangs of the hood start fighting.
Right.
In the ghetto. You follow that? That's pretty
cool. So, and you're saying the real fulcrum of power is no longer satellites and SDI, it's more some kind of...
It's the interplay of Furry Lint and Mass Man, or we can call it the White House. This is
why do you call that Furry Lint? Why would you associate Furry Lint and Mass Man with the White House?
Okay, Carter and Reagan and Clinton, they all come in as outsiders, as acceptable mass man images of the furry lint phenomenon. We're going to come in and change this.
What do you mean the furry lint phenomenon? I know you said that
that's... Oh, no, we didn't go into that yet.
Associated with Larry Flint.
Larry Flint is an outsider, the, you know, pornographer, who had an empire, and he had money to throw around, so he decided to do some exposing of the mysteries of Watergate, JFK assassination, McCarthyism, Al Capone, Mafia, the whole, what I call in my chart, gallery magazine, penthouse kind of stuff, the his stories behind the news, the suppressed information. So Larry Flint was going to reveal all this through his magazine, The Rebel, which he started in the fall of 83, and he was going to have Mae Brussel as a chief advisor on it. Well, all hell broke out. Tim Leary was part of that, Dick Gregory, Mark Cooper, who's a left-wing commentator. I don't know if you ever heard of Mark Cooper. And other people, they all ganged up around Larry Flint and hijacked Hustler. The Rebel, the magazine was called The Rebel. Mm-hmm. It only ran about 8 issues, but Mark Cooper was against Mae Brussel, and there was problems. So Mae was documenting this on her weekly broadcast, all the inside dirt that was going on around the Rebel magazine.
Mm-hmm.
And in the middle of that, Larry Flint ran for president, started running for president, late 83, early 84. And he got in trouble in Chicago and showed up at court with Sherman Skolnick, and I think he was in a baby diaper. So Skolnick was reporting to Mae about this nuttiness, and to me, because I was...
What was the symbolic gesture of the baby diaper?
I can't remember it. I don't even know if it's true. It's just in my mind.
Had he been wounded at that time?
Yeah, that happened in 78. That's why he could start the magazine. He had a new, being in agony for 5 years. In 83, he had surgery, which, cut off his genitals or affected them, the nerves down there, so he couldn't have sex anymore, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he wouldn't have any feeling down there, but he wouldn't have pain anymore. So he sacrificed his sexual function to get the operation, and now he could function again. So then he was all excited about doing something. He was angry at the Reagan administration. So he started to run this muckraking operation around the Rebel magazine, and then he tried to run for president, and what was that guy's name, the one that Gordon Novell came in, and then Mae Brussel suspected that Gordon Novell gave Larry Flint some drugs, and then Larry started acting nutty, or he wasn't acting nutty, but he got busted, and he was put, and maybe Skolnick describes when they showed up in court in Chicago, they were wheelchair to wheelchair, because Skolnick and Larry were both in wheelchairs. So it was sort of funny. And Skolnick was being an advisor on the recommendation of Mae Brussel to Larry Flint to help him in his legal problems in Chicago. But one thing led to another, and by early spring, Larry Flint was in a mind control hospital.
Oh.
And then he was in prison there for, kept in there for months, and then Hustler changed, and there was a shake-up there, and then... some people say Hustler never the same again, and Larry Flint was sort of sidelined. So that's the tragedy of his run for president, was that result.
Mm.
So,
did his daughter take over as Hustler?
No, that's Playboy.
Okay, so he, but Hustler, well, it still continued to produce pornography. It just maybe didn't have the his political undertones or something.
Yeah, and he stopped doing the Rebel.
Mm-hmm.
So his big journalistic attack as an outsider didn't work. So I wrote a play on this, since I was sort of an insider to the whole thing, called Who's Forgotten Furry Lint? Who's Forgotten Larry Flint? So I did that in 84.
Was there any other, like, double entendres on the furry lint or puns or something, or was it just straightforward sort of reversal of his name?
No, it means that... in a post-information environment, and of course I was intuiting this stuff, but I wasn't talking about it too much, but Furry Lint was a play about that. It was showing that anybody who tries to counter and the mainstream illusion or the fake news and bring in truth, you know, like Art Bell did, they would be...
Art Bell brought in truth?
Well, he claimed to be bringing in the real news behind the news.
Mm-hmm.
Okay,
right.
People by the 80s are pretty detached from mixed corporate media and the news manufacturing. It was the Reagan era. Reagan just waves, and people felt it was a huge cover-up of what was really going on because all the media were bending over backwards for the White House. And there were books written on that. And in the journalistic world, that's a fact. That's how Reagan was perceived, as the end of journalism and investigative reporting. And nobody cared what was happening in the rest of the world because it was a reborn America, according to the Reagan image. But the furlent means that anybody who tries to run a independent muckraking operation will be wiped off the face of the media landscape of the United States like a piece of lint.
Mm.
Piece of furry lint.
Mm-hmm.
That's how insignificant it is. So I wrote this play, and then that in Bob Marshall.
You called it Who's Forgotten?
Furry lint. Who's forgotten furry lint?
Who are you implying is the who that has forgotten furry lint?
The American public.
Uh-huh, yeah.
And furry lint is anybody, you know, from Dick Gregory to Mae Brussel to Sherman Skolnick to Frank Zappa, anybody who has a transitional or temporary image of going to wake up the people through some form of information. There's been so many of them since Tim Leary, you could say, or Lenny Bruce, that it's an archetype. It's an art form and now an archetype in American media.
Mm-hmm.
So Furry Lint referred particularly to Larry Flint as the latest expression of the Furry Lint phenomenon, but Furry Lint in general referred to you're going to try to wipe out the consensus of the Andrew meme, you're going to be prepared for disappointment. So you're just going to be wiped off like a piece of lint.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, because you're up against the mass man effect, which is the collective consensus of analog media's ESP.
Right. So you're implying that there is that the collective consensus Android meme reality is that there is a deeper truth to be told. But anybody who tries to tell is just going to get wiped out in the...
No. The deeper truth would not deal with the content. And the furry lints deal with the truth of the content. And that news story is covering up this or that.
Mm-hmm.
You know, like the whole 911 truth movement. That's a furry lint phenomenon.
Right.
So, and you know, Art Bell, I bring up him. He's always been having people on who tell the true story about this and that. You know. So that's a phenomenon. So the mass man complement to that, even though they merge, because Ronald Reagan comes in as a outsider. John Paul II is an outsider. He's a different kind of pope. So they become iconic religious figures almost.
Mm-hmm.
And so they are...
Are you saying that this mass man consensus world Android meme hologram is cloaking stuff that we should truly be concerned about? I mean, real stories, real truth, real behind-the-scenes negotiations, Sherman Skolnick kind of secret council intense stuff that we should be...
Or the Battle of the Harvest Moon, which is listed as the political symptom,
Dr.
Beter story.
Yeah. Now, if these stories were allowed to
get major prominence,
yeah, would we then be
made healthier?
Yeah, made healthier.
No, that's the point. Is it no story? Because we live inside environments that carry on regardless of whatever the story or the news item or the commission or the investigation comes to. It's a transient information environment,
mm-hmm,
on the content level. And that the endless transience is the ground. It's a quicksand. It's mercurial. Endless stories all the time because people need new content for their, because they're all consuming the same media forms.
Mm-hmm.
So, or the modern digital electronic forms. So that leads to a post-information situation in terms of any one story finally stopping the world, and we're going to do something about it. Like take global warming. That's never going to be acted on.
Mm-hmm.
Too many structural media environments that are meaning that create a situation where nobody could stay focused on one topic.
Mm-hmm.
So that's the situation, and that creates a huge grievance and a huge need, and it's solved by the Second Coming. So the Second Coming as the Christian meaning, but it also is refers to the tetrad and the retrieval aspect of the tetrad, yet the retrieval comes back as a huge archetype. And so the neocon world, that was neoconservative world that was brought in with President Reagan and John Paul II, they represent the second coming of a stabilization of some kind of anthropomorphic family image that was, in fact, totally subsumed and disappeared by the discarnate effect of mixed corporate media and what we later called the Android meme. So people were trying to figure out how to establish a human scale again. Now, the Android meme at that point in the 80s was providing the image of human scale and a retrieval of family values, community values, community responsibility, just say no to drugs, and all that kind of stuff that the Reagan administration put out. That is a kind of religious hope and a religious mood that comes in. So it's also referring to fundamentalism all over the world, different kinds of religious fundamentalism, mm-hmm. the retrieval of the religious fanaticism. So that the ground is not a technology. The ground is second coming. And that's Bob Marshall's interpretation of me talking about the human scale and the shrinking of the media.
This is where the anthropomorphic...
Yeah, but I didn't use that phrase in public back then.
Yeah.
But that it's a similar meaning.
But it's basically, it's not a technology, and it's not a... It's an image or an idea or...
It's the effect of the merger and shrinking of technology so that people begin to think that they are more powerful than media.
Oh.
Which is what I explained in my chart and explained over the last 8-10 years here, but that's what Bob Marshall meant by second coming, and that's how he interpreted whatever I said in those areas.
Yeah.
I don't know what I was saying back then, and well, I knew what it was saying, but I didn't know what he was taking in.
What years were these when you were saying this to him?
83. I met him in the fall of 83, so if you go on Android Memes Anachrony and look in the diaries, you hear I have some of our dialogues when I'm teaching him in the late 83 and early 84, preparing him to go on the radio. You'll see those.
Okay.
And so this is a year and a half before he made this chart.
So you're already seeing the shrinking of technology back then.
Yeah, because it happened on Secret Council 10.
Well, the PC is already beginning to, it's just beginning to hit the consumer level, right?
Yeah, it's been a year, 1984 is when Apple took off.
Yeah. So it's about the time we see the breakthrough from the mainframe to the personal computer.
Yes. And also at that period, I'm still in the Secret Council 10, and I see what's going on there, and I'm aware of the shrinking because it's happening in the deeper levels of power.
Right.
And that leads to me, in a way, doing a second coming by taking over the Secret Council 10 and dismantling it.
Uh-huh.
But I don't want to present myself as a religious figure, but there was, within that world, my action.
Yeah. So you're part of the mechanism of this.
I was
helping
responding.
You're one of the facets of the...
Of that phase in the 80s of the technological effect.
Mm-hmm.
And the Battle of the Harvest Moon is Beter's famous news story, Beter being a furry lint. Oh, yeah, I should say that. So in 1988, in August 88, Bob Marshall and Dave Neufeld had a chance to put... they had about 4 hours given to them late Sunday night in near the end of August, around the 24th, maybe, August 24th, 1988. Given 4 hours to put whatever they want. So, put on the air. So I brought out all my tapes of Mae Brussel and private phone conversations with her and Beter and Zappa and everything. And you've heard the audio 4-hour extravaganza called Who's Forgotten Furryland?
Oh, sure.
Yeah, well, that was the audio version of what I was thinking when I wrote the play in 84. So it's 4 years later, and we run through all the furry lints, or all the holy offices, Bob Marshall and I used to call them. You know, we have Dave Worster on there representing Cosmic Awareness. We have Dick Gregory, Beater. But Beater being, and they were all furry lints, all right? He had like 10 different furry lints.
Well, since there's 10 of them, why do you select Larry Flint to represent the group, the category?
Because he was in the media. Dave Wirst was not in the media. Beater was not in the media. He'd retired.
Yeah.
And Zappa was a little bit. But the point was you had to be involved with the presidency.
Right.
And so Larry Flint ran for president.
Oh, I actually didn't know that, or I forgot. Yeah.
Yes. So that you have this White House aspect around the Second Coming, the merging of the word that makes the market, and that's Furryland and the Masked Man is aspects of the White House.
Of course, he would just do that to stir up controversy and be outrageous.
Yeah.
I mean, he was a public enemy. I mean, the way that he portrayed women in Hustler was not the average family guy probably thought that was pretty disgusting.
Yeah, and so, but he thought he knew something. And so he had the righteousness of intellectual or information superiority. He had the goods on the moral majority of Jerry Falwell, whatever.
Oh.
So he had the goods on the Kennedy assassination. So the that's the Furland thing. That's the all-American way.
Mm-hmm.
That's George Bush. He came in as an outsider.
Yeah.
So the Battle of the Harvest Moon, though, is symptomatic.
Was he close to discovering, like, Secret Council of Ten stuff?
Dr. Beater?
No, Larry Flint.
No.
He wasn't operating on that level.
Dr. Beater was.
Dr. Beater was.
Yeah, he knew me.
Yeah.
He basically kind of knew it.
Yeah.
That's why people don't believe his information. But Beater says, in 1977, 78, he's describing the big story of the Battle of the Harvest Moon, where the Russian, or the Bolshevik Soviet Union, but recently taken over by the Russian Native Christian faction that Gorbachev comes out of, the Bolsheviks, secretly controlled by the Russian Christians, Native Christians, who were patriots and hated the Bolsheviks, they knocked out the Rockefeller moon base, particle beam weaponry on the moon that the Rockefellers put up there in the middle 70s.
The Rockefellers were representing the Pentagon?
They ran the Pentagon at that point.
Oh.
And so the Rockefellers put the...
They had a particle beam weapon on the moon?
Yeah, and so therefore they had a fulcrum point to control the planet, at least the industrial...
Well, what do you mean control? What is a particle... What kind of power do you have when you have a particle beam weapon?
Well, you can zap the Russian satellites.
Oh.
So that's a Star Wars scenario.
Mm-hmm.
But this is 5 years, 6 years before Star Wars, as Reagan lays out.
So Reagan must have known about the Rockefeller program.
I don't know if he did. You don't have to know anything when you're at White House, when you're the president.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, all of us, but who's he going to believe? If you're the president, you can't believe anybody.
Yeah.
Distorted information. You just decide, or they tell you what to decide on, and you agree with it, and you go out and give a press conference. But the point is here is that this battle happened, and it was never reported in the media. And so the Bolsheviks took over the Rockefeller Empire, but inside the Bolsheviks were the Native Christians, and they toppled the Bolsheviks, who defected to the old Rockefeller Empire around the Pentagon. So the Bolsheviks have been running the Pentagon since the late 70s.
Now,
this is all Dr. Beater's scenario.
Right.
And so the secret event that happened is the Battle of the Harvest Moon. And the reason it's a symptom in the Second Coming phase of the chart is that nobody knows if it even happened, or even, most people wouldn't even believe it.
Yeah.
So we've gone from McCarthyism, the JFK assassination, to Watergate, to a virtual event, in quotes.
Mm. Yeah.
Okay, so now what were you going to say?
Phil, clue me in a little bit on the... On the Bolsheviks, where do they rise to power? When do they rise to power in Russia?
They are funded by European oligarchy, like Turnin Taxis in 1917, and they send Lenin in through Finland on a train out of Germany and then up to Finland and into the collapsing Russian nation because it's failing in World War One. So it retreats from the war, and then there's all kinds of revolutions, and the Tsar's empire in Russia is weakening. So there's a provisional government set up by a guy, I think his name was Kerensky, and then Lenin comes in the fall of 1917, and they take over from the provisional government and set up the Bolshevik government. But it was funded
by Bolshevik a political affiliation or a
dogma? It's a Bolshevism is a Russian version of Marxism, communist.
Okay.
So it's the Russian version of being a communist. There were different. There was the Trotskyites. There were different interpretations of socialism and Marxism, and communism. But the Bolsheviks were supported by an international oligarchy team, and you can read the history of that through all kinds of conspiratorial literature. LaRouche does a good history. Beder does a good history. So the Bolsheviks, though, they needed cooperation since they were international, and they were partly supported by the Rockefeller cartel or the people before the Rockefellers that the Rockefellers would take over. It was a global village back then. They're beginning to set up a Big Brother's operation of the three parts of the global empire.
Yeah.
It's spelled out in 1984.
I just looked them up in Wikipedia, so just to sort of recapitulate what you said, the Bolsheviks derived from Bolshentovo, which means majority, were a faction of the Marxist Russian Social Democratic Labor Party, which split from the Mensheviks
yeah.
faction.
I think they were run by Kerensky.
At the Second Congress, Second Party Congress, 1903, and ultimately became the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. The Bolsheviks seized power in Russia during October Revolution phase of the Russian Revolution, 1917. So that's what you said, yeah. And then how did this Christian faction slip in?
Well, they were the local. They were influential locally as part of the Tsarist regime. They were a fanatic religious Christian sect, and I won't go into details about them. They were called the Skopsies, according to Beder, and you maybe Google that, but don't do that right now. So the Bolsheviks, the international part of the Bolsheviks, needed a local support system. So the white Christian Soviet, the Russian white Christians or Skopsies, supported the revolution because they were trying to have their own revolution, but they got hijacked by the Bolsheviks, so they were forced to work with the Bolsheviks, but resented that. So they kept their tongue for 60 years.
So they had a pretty powerful secret space program to be able to put a particle beam weapon, which even today I don't think is anybody realizes exists or ever has existed.
Right.
And then to be able to get it on the moon before we this been before or after the we landed on the moon in 60.
Landed on the moon 69. Yeah, you see what Beder explained was the space program, NASA's space program, the Apollo project, was phased out by 72, 73 because Rockefeller was going to militarize it.
Oh.
It was no longer a citizen's enterprise.
Yeah.
And so from 74 on, it was preparing and hijacking for its own purposes to get on the moon and set up a military advantage there with the new particle beam technology, laser technology. So they were involved in that from 74 to 77, and they accomplished it.
Wait a minute. The Bolsheviks put the particle beam weapon on the moon.
No, the Russians did.
The Russians did.
Yeah.
The Russians.
No, sorry. The Rockefellers put the particle beam on the moon.
Yeah.
And the Bolsheviks were flying around in cosmospheres. It was Beder's term. They didn't really want to just focus on the moon.
Oh.
So when the particle beam was built up, the Bolshevik cosmospheres took out the laser.
Is a cosmosphere like a space station?
Yeah, a space vehicle. Advanced space shuttle, so to speak. Pretty, you know, science fiction.
Rocket powered or anti-gravity?
I don't know. I'll have to go back and listen to the tapes, look at the transcripts. I'm probably in between.
Yeah.
So they knocked out the particle beam, but then the Russian Christian Skopsies toppled the Bolsheviks right at that point. So they inherited the fulcrum of power with the moon base.
How did they topple the Bolsheviks?
They killed them off. Now,
how did they do that?
Assassination.
Oh.
They had infiltrated them. Were very close. They were. It's almost like they were undercover. I mean, they had disguises, and all of a sudden they turned on their supposed buddy and killed them.
And dismantled or took over their space program?
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So that's beater scenario. The point is that the point within this chart is that you would have no way to verify any of this stuff. And you have no way to verify what the heck Ronald Reagan is, because it's a virtual image, the term you would use in the 90s. It's an image, it's the Android meme, and it's
It had been an image since Kennedy.
Yes, but it's now imploded that the whole world revolves around the White House.
Didn't it revolve around the White House and Kennedy?
Yeah, and that's where you get my chart. You get the homeopathic replays, the shrinking of it. But it's hyper-shrunk in the 80s. You go, there's only one person left, the White House.
Hmm.
So that's Furry Lent. He comes in as someone representing the anthropomorphic physical or human scale or some kind of retrieval of community or truth. That's the Furry Lent aspect of the necessary image of the White House contender. And he's miming the mass man, so he must look like everybody or have what McCoon called charisma.
Right.
Have a very average presentation. And this is a religious operation. And it's emerging of what McClellan would call the military bureaucracy and the temple bureaucracy. The temple bureaucracy was pre-industrial or pre-Rome, ancient Babylonian religious societies or time-bound empires.
Yeah.
And the military bureaucracy is represented by the Pentagon or industrial space. That factor merges in the new president. So you have to have a born-again president.
Right.
Every president since Carter has to be super religious.
Yeah, and...
the image does.
Yeah, right.
There's your fundamentalism.
I think Croker refers to that strain of... that religious strain as being sort of uptight and puritanical.
In the American version,
And that would really create sparks with, you know, between Larry Flint trying to go up against that.
Yeah, a lot of people gathered around Flint from the 60s, you know, the hedonistic 60s were... people weren't being Puritans, and then suddenly it flipped due to the media dynamics, flipped into a Puritan image in the 80s, and a lot of the old 60s people objected to that.
Right.
So you had Tim Leary, Dick Gregory, Frank Zappa, Gordon Novell, and a few other people hanging out with Larry Flint and writing for his magazine and hoping to cause an image of a revolution. All of it going nowhere and really based on nothing, just like the White House is based on nothing. To virtual reality, and so the political symptom that Bob Marshall imaginatively thought paralleled that phase was a story that you'll never find out whether it's real or not. Battle
right.
of the Harvest Moon.
Yeah.
Just like the story has Teflon effect, just like Reagan and John Paul II had a Teflon effect. It's a time of political correctness, too.
Right. So, I don't know if there's anything more that can be said about this. I'm still trying to get a little bit more of a sensibility around this idea that that the White House is more, that the world is more centered around the White House during Reagan than it was during Kennedy.
Well, think of it as the more and more the world is getting obsessed with imagery and what's called the lack of substance.
Mm-hmm.
Beginning of the dumbing down of America. But
yeah.
That's because the media dynamics have imploded so much because people live by media by the 80s.
Yeah.
More and more hours spent watching TV and all those statistics.
Right.
And so more and more is focused on what's going on in the media. And
right.
then there has to be an image of control or stability, so you get in a tough image in the White House.
Right.
Law and order. So, and everything, and then you start having packed journalism. Everybody just trying to find out what the latest White House press release is and not doing traditional, hot, literate, investigative journalism anymore. The fringe magazines take that over.
Yeah.
Mother Jones, whatever, before the Internet.
Right.
So it's the implosion definitely starts happening with television in the 50s, and that's why you have these four levels, and it's all global theater. It's been global theater since the 50s, but each new technology has intensified and imploded and also created a sense of autonomy for people as it fragments through the digital effect. Now, so what Bob Marshall's laid out here is developed and more fine-tuned on my chart where you get the homeopathic replays.
Right. And
so it's an increasingly homeopathic image.
Yeah.
And more, it's the also the idea more and more is done with less and less. So Ronald Reagan doesn't even have to know anything. He just has to come out and wave and be optimistic.
Right. But the homeopathic
image.
And they
both got shot. Now look at this.
Oh, yeah.
Ronald Reagan got shot in end of March 81. John Paul got shot in May 81, two months later.
Right.
And they both recovered from them. So they almost could be considered, from the fundamentalist Christian view, as beasts. The beasts of Revelations. They get a military leader gets shot, and then he recovers miraculously, and then starts the Antichrist world. You know about that?
Yeah.
Fundamentalist prophecy comes out of the Book of Revelations,
right?
Interpreted by fundamentalists.
Right.
So there's a.
Well, what sense did they create the Antichrist world?
Beg your pardon?
What sense are you saying they created the Antichrist world?
Well, according to the fundamentalists, whoever interprets the Bible this way, takes it literally, the Bible predicts in Daniel, I think, in the Old Testament, and then in the Book of Revelation to the New Testament, it predicts the end of the world just before the Second Coming creates the tribulation. And part of the tribulation is the rise of the Antichrist. And the Antichrist supposedly is someone who's a great military leader in the world somewhere, who gets killed or gets injured but miraculously recovers and then merges with the Vatican, and which is called the Whore of Babylon, and creates a new Holy Roman Empire.
Hmm. Yeah, a new Holy Roman Empire. Well, now, so you have, I know you do have Reagan and Pope John Paul II as a popular art form. Are you saying that they're merging?
No, there are two phases.
Okay.
Well, they're in a, well, yeah, no, it's a good point. I don't have an A, B there, do I?
No.
So, yeah, they're merging. Because the whole thing is merging, because Massman and Freeland merge. But it's the old battle between church and state, which in the Democratic period or the Enlightenment period, the United States Constitution, they set up a situation where religion could not function in the White House, so to speak, right?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
State and church were separate.
Mm-hmm.
Well, when you get the imploded beginning of the Android meme in the Global Theater, then church and state, that separation outlives its uselessness, is what McClellan used to say. Outlives its uselessness, and you start to have the merger of the military bureaucracy, which is state, and the religious bureaucracy, or meme, which is church, and so you have born-again and religious leaders becoming political.
Yeah.
So remember, John Paul II becomes a political figure. He stirs up solidarity, if you believe the mainstream history. He stirs up the Polish Solidarity Union movement around Lech Walesa, and that leads to the downfall of the Soviet Union.
Hmm.
And that's happening in 81. So he's an activist. He's the first pope to go global in that sense, to get out of the Vatican and go become a media image.
Hmm.
That's why he supposedly was so popular. Pope Paul VI before him was just hid in the Vatican throughout the 70s.
Mm.
Let the mafia run the Vatican Bank. John Paul II, after the 30-day pope, Pope John Paul I, in September 78, pope for 33 days, he gets murdered. And remember, Coppola's Godfather 3 is based on around that incident. It's about the murder of John Paul I. Then John Paul II comes in, a few months later, whenever they decide, the pope, I don't know how fast it took, and then he'd run the show from 79 till, what is it, about 2005?
Uh-huh.
Long time.
Huh.
And he becomes a very powerful figure for the Catholics around the world.
Hmm.
He enters the media, virtual matrix.
Yeah.
And Reagan did that for the American state dream. He revitalized the image of the United States of America as a dream around the world.
Mm-hmm.
So they were taking old media, what I call the mythic stage, and myth always has a religious element in it. The mythic stage that the world had come to as an effect of the technological implosion of mixed corporate media, Second Coming, as you'll see on my chart, is the mythic level. If you look at the Croker Quadrant, it's called the mythic stage. It comes after the universe.
Mm-hmm.
So the mythic, as Bob Marshall interpreted it, to the degree I talked about it, he calls Second Coming, because there is a religious dimension to the secular power.
Mm-hmm.
So, yeah, that's the merging of Furland and Mathman and Reagan and John Paul II.
Yeah. Mathman, technological art form. Give me a little more texture to what you mean by Mathman.
Well, one thing, when I first said that Reagan and John Paul aren't the same. Remember, it wasn't my chart, and that's my view. But when I suddenly realized what Bob Marshall told me he meant, then I remembered that they did merge. So I'm just explaining that little slip inaccuracy. And then I had to come up with the reasoning of why they did merge.
Mm-hmm.
And then it helped me understand, oh, yeah, that's what Bob Marshall meant. At least his translation of me. Mathman is, right now, we're on electric medium, the telephone.
Mm-hmm.
And therefore, we have left where we are physically in our chemical body. I'm in your place, you're in mine, and all the people that are tapping us, we're there too, as well as they're here. So the physical, the normal physical three-dimensional space-time continuum is transcended by electric media, or permeated. So mass man is discarnate man who's everywhere at once.
Mm-hmm.
That's a discarnate state.
Yeah.
That's not a tribal man.
But the thing is, I always get a little confused.
You've got to perceive this.
Is that there's a
perception.
Yeah, but, I mean, we're still dealing with a sender and receiver. You're sending, I'm receiving. I'm sending, you're receiving.
No, the brain doesn't see that. I'm not thinking about that. You're right in my head.
Yeah.
Okay, and I'm in your head. Now, that's telephone. Then there's television.
Yeah, but you still distinguish your identity from my identity. I mean, we're not the same mass man.
Oh, yes, but the institutions that use the telephone change, and I have to adapt to the change.
Mm-hmm.
The telephone was an important aspect of World War II. It allowed different gangs to surface in the Nazi Party. The Goebbels gang, the Goering gang, was all decentralized. Albert Speer talks about this in the Nuremberg trials. He was put in jail. He was the Nazi armaments minister, and he talks about the decentralizing effect of the telephone in the Nazi party. And McLuhan quotes him, I think, in the very first issue of Explorations,
mm-hmm.
in December 1953. So you and I may perceive ourselves as separate private bodies, but our communication media, speech, and everything else that we use, all our technologies, are affected by the telephone.
Yeah.
Changes the structure of society.
Right.
So we are, and that's why you
so
have...
So mass man becomes the medium through which we communicate.
Mass man is an effect of the electric media. And so McLuhan said we weren't tribal. That was still chemical bodies. Tribal was the social phenomena as content of the discarnate effect. It begins in the 30s with the rise of fascism and communism and the New Deal in America and the labor state in Britain. That is the collectivization that's happening to the Western individualist tradition. And what's interesting, why I recommend people read Wyndham Lewis, is there you have a very strong, genius individual reacting to the mass man in his books, The Art of Being Ruled and Time and Western Man, written in 26, came out in 26 and 27. He wrote them a year or two before. There are parts of what he wrote year or two before, since 1922. But there's a painterly individualist artistic genius confronting the collectivist mass man effect. And because he's dealing with it, he's writing about it intelligently because he's aware of it. He can see the ground.
It's sort of the David and Goliath. He's sort of like Dave. It's sort of like David and Goliath.
Yeah, mass man is Goliath.
Yeah.
And the Christian tradition is based on individual souls and all that. So, yeah, it's Christian, it's left hemisphere, it's alphabetic, and it's David. Now, what's interesting about Lewis, he was, in a way, you could say, the father of media ecology. Because in his book, Time and Western Man, he took the phenomena of the early 20s, the new successes in arts and culture and popular entertainment. He looked at Charlie Chaplin, James Joyce, Ezra Pound, Picasso, Gertrude Stein, a woman novelist named Anita Loos, and other and philosophers like Oswald Spengler, and other phenomena, And he said, there's a hidden ground here, making all these figures, which resonate with the hidden ground, popular. And so he started to notice the ground, and he saw the ground was technological. And so he called the ground mechanized man, or he had different terms. But he also saw the intellectual concepts that support the ground, and he called it the time philosophy. Oh, yeah, the other thing was Einstein. Einstein's revolution in time and space. So he saw, just like this chart, he would have understood this chart. He saw James Joyce, Einstein, Picasso, Charlie Chaplin, jazz, you know, maybe Josephine Baker or somebody, and philosophers like Spengler and Bergson, all a product of time. But what was time? He said time was a mechanical metaphor for the industrial effect. So that's why he's very interesting to read, and he was the main influence on McLuhan. So this chart comes out of Wyndham Lewis.
Mm-hmm. And Wyndham Lewis's comment. Now, the Industrial Revolution really gets going with because electricity allows for automation of machinery.
Yeah.
I guess it gets going probably even before the automobile, but then we get...
Well, the industrial starts with the printing press, but it gets into the kinetic machine, steam and rail level, that you call that the Industrial Revolution, but automation comes in with electricity.
Right. So Wyndham Lewis is... What are the... While he's commenting on the time metaphor, how far back is he saying that began to happen?
Well, he tracks it back into the 19th century. So he's tracking the industrialization, and he sees the powers that be, the humanists and the philosophers and cultural intellectuals, as still living in the 19th century conceptually. They're still sort of literate, and they don't see the new technological and pop culture environments.
Mm-hmm.
And he's one of the first to write a book on advertising. Mechanical Bride is an updating of Lewis's book on advertising called The Doom of Youth.
Mm-hmm.
But here's another aspect. Part of the Second Coming is the Android meme is going to wake up the individual. The individual, the virtual individual in the mediascape, being targeted, like in the world of Madison Avenue, demographics comes in, niche marketing. All this stuff is moving past the mass broadcast image. You're starting with instant replay, answer machines, video recorders. You're beginning to disconnect from the mass rhythm of one-way broadcast media. Okay?
Mm-hmm.
So it brings back a sense of the individual autonomy. So Ronald Reagan and John Paul are the second coming of the Western individual. And so is Furry Lynch. He's going to stand up for the rights of the individual against mass man.
Yeah. But they're the virtual avatar token inside the virtual space.
Yeah. It's an illusion. Just like you could say the Battle of the Harvest Moon was a story that never happened. And couldn't happen, and yet you don't know that, so you might as well use it in your information fantasy.
Right. Yeah.
So the whole phase of that eighth level of the chart is like one big fantasy.
That's funny. I just thought of that. You know, you get online and you can play these games, computer games with people, where you take a token and you become identified with that token, and you move through the virtual world with that token.
Yeah.
So in a sense, Reagan and John Paul were like virtual tokens inside the virtual landscape.
And they contain the symbols or tokens of the nation, the planet, the solar system, and the universe.
Mm-hmm.
Or existentialism, Norman Mailer, Club of Rome, or Elvis, Beatles, Saturday Night Live, all those media phases before them were all imploded into the super popularity of them.
Right. Yeah, I like, so it was Arthur Croker, I think, coined the term holon. A holon is like an atom is a holon because it's a whole entity.
I don't think Croker coined it. I didn't know.
Did I say Croker? I meant
yeah.
Arthur, Arthur, I forget. maybe it was Arthur Kessler.
Yeah, I'm thinking that you're trying to say Kessler.
Yeah. But like an atom is a whole entity in and of itself, but it's only a part of a molecule. A molecule subsumes the atom within itself, but within a larger context called the molecule. And then you have like a biological cell, which is made up of molecules. So the molecules are holons, but they're only parts of the cell. The cell becomes a new holon, which includes all of the previous stages within itself, but it creates a new context for those previous stages. So
right.
these are kind of like holons.
Holons like here. My term, holeopathic.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
Yeah, it's a similar meaning. Mm-hmm. It's talking in terms of matter, whereas I bring in homeopathy, which is the invisible zones.
When I think of the holeopathic, I think of that the hologram is getting smaller, but I forget about the fact that, like a holon, it includes all of the previous stages or elements within it and provides us a new context or matrix in which they can all exist.
And what is the matrix? It's a memory theater. And that's part of the other meaning of Second Coming, because people, in a way, are becoming nostalgic for familiar realities as the 80s become stranger and stranger, or the media landscape creates this strangeness. And so you have the retrieval of fundamentalisms or of particular cultural memory systems become part of the global theater. And McLuhan wrote about in the 60s that Finnegan's Wake anticipate the memory theater that the satellite brought in. So you have this intense reference to everything that went before, imploded into one image. So yeah, Reagan and John Paul II are holons.
Yeah, cool.
It's the process of the changing from the holon of Eisenhower and then the holon of Kennedy, the holon of Nixon, the holon of Carter, and then Reagan. That process is what my chart goes through.
Mm-hmm.
To just say the holon, you're just naming one thing, but there's a transmutating factor in the process of the electric age that you need to understand.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what Joyce worked on and McLuhan worked on and what my chart features. And this is a very simple version of that Bob Mars was trying to present.
Right.
So we must be near...
This would be a good place to end this part, and then we'll pick up...
We'll do the top-down chart, the complement to this chart that Bob Marshall made next session.
Yeah. Very good. So we'll just end this here.